Hi, I'm Kalyan Karmakar, and welcome to a fresh episode of Foodocracy for Her. Foodocracy for Her is where I speak to women in the world of food who are doing some amazing stuff. We've been doing this chat since every week since April 2020. And today it's a great pleasure to interview and introduce to you a former editor of mine and now friend, Tanu Ganguly. And Tanu is the founder of Mishri Reviews. But I've known her first towards the tail end of her earlier avatar with NDTV. So great to have you on board, Tanu.
Hi, Kalyan. Very happy to be here. I love Foodocracy, the name. So really happy to be here. Yes.
Yeah, it's a play on democracy. So I first started with Foodocracy India, which is about talking about local joints, street food joints. Then Foodocracy for Her happened last April. And I think it's one of the most fascinating projects I've worked with. I mean, the stories have been just amazing.
Yeah. I've seen in your case, the podcasts, and yeah, they're lovely. Very glad.
Thanks so much. And in your case, we are going to tap on your story, no doubt, but I'm going to also tap on your expertise in being in the sector, both as an editor for content and as a founder, to get a lot of tips from there.
Sure.
So Tanu had started in NDTV and officially in about 2000 or so.
Yes.
And NDTV, of course, is known as a news channel, but she never did news. So what were you doing there, Tanu?
You know, I first started with NDTV as a news election intern, and this was back in the day when there were no electronic voting machines. Everything was a physical ballot, right? And so when the ballot boxes, when they started counting them, it had to go on for as long as it took, whether it was 2 days, 3 days. So the counting process would typically take 3 days. And so NDTV would need a lot of college students to come in and, do that 3 day kind of work. And so that's how I started. One of my cousins called me and said, NDTV is looking for 3 days for these interns. Would you do it? And who minded extra pocket money in those days? So that's how I started. And then I kept going back to NDTV, even as a college student, for some short work or the other, And one thing was that we were really looked after, right? So for a college student to get 1600 rupees for 3 days of work in those days, and to be constantly fed the most lovely and delicious food was a winner, right? You didn't want to do anything else then. So I think
that's the beauty of your Bengali run company.
yeah, and also Bengali employees, then they appreciate food that much more, right?
So this was in Delhi, right?
This was in Delhi, in Greater Kailash, yes.
And Delhi had so many exciting work opportunities for college students, because my youngest aunt grew up there. So she would sometimes, go into the film festival and volunteer there and this, that.
Yes.
So
yes.
There's a lot of it. In Calcutta, we would give tuitions and that's about it.
I should tell you, I did that as well. I did that as well after college. I decided I wouldn't take pocket money from my parents anymore. So I started teaching young. I think he was in grade 8 or 6 or something like that. So, but yeah, there was a lot of good opportunities happening around the time. I'm talking about when NDTV did not, there was no profit, and 24/7 and Hindi were not launched then. This was still Star News days. So
no profit. She's talking of the channel NDTV profit.
Yeah,
NDTV
profit, the business channel.
Yes.
And this was Star News days. So that's how I started.
It was a startup in a sense. NDTV was a startup in a sense, at that time when you started.
It was a startup. The average age must have been 25, 26. Everyone was so committed and so involved in everything. You wanted to be there. You wanted to be a part of that. But to answer your original question, news wasn't something, somehow short form didn't click with me. So I did Jeevan 3G. I was the AD's AD, I think, back then.
Prime Minister Indian.
Yes, Prime Minister adaptation of BBC. Yeah. I did Good Morning India, of course, for a while. Then there was, then of course, gradually as the company grew, there were a lot of non-news programming that one could do. I think in the last decade, it was mostly about NDTV Good Times, the lifestyle channel.
Yes.
That was, I think that is around the time where I started feeling that food was it, that what I wanted to continue to do would have to be in the food space. From there, from television, I moved to digital with NDTV Food, which was also called Smart Cookie for a bit. And yeah, that
This is where we connected.
Yes.
In fact, in your television production avatar and in food, you also sort of produced Veer Sangvi's show. I mean, where he was one of the three judges, the India-Pakistan
cook-off.
Yes, Foodistan. In fact, he's written about this bright young producer who sort of brought it out beautifully in his book, A Root Life.
Yes.
So you're there. You're there in the book. And how was the transition from television and then into website and content, and which was more textual at that point? Mm-hmm. So how's it handling the transition?
So, you know, honestly, the transition was very smooth for me. A couple of reasons. One, I was moving from food to food in that sense. So at least the larger space was similar, number one. Number two, by the time I moved to digital, it wasn't the days of text only digital. Video was an integral part of it. In fact, one of the reasons I was moved to one of these divisions within NDTV was because I came with broadcast and production background. I could direct and produce and script and, you know, which were suddenly very valuable in the digital space. It wasn't just, you know, video was becoming big. And this this should be 2015, 16, around
that.
Yeah. So in that sense, the transition wasn't difficult. In fact, I felt that you had far more tools to gauge what your audience was liking or not liking. Everything could be tracked.
In social versus
On digital, yeah. You know, you can track the user, you know engagement levels. Mm-hmm. It's not just about your show is ready, you've published it, it's live, and, you know, then you wait, you know, for a handful of households in the country to tell you if it works or not. So I quite enjoyed it. Moving to digital.
I'm going to ask you one last question on content and then move on to the part which I want to focus on, which is, what are you doing here? That's my cat in the interview. He's crashing the interview. He's gone somewhere. Yeah. So, okay. So, you know, in the beginning, so I said content before we move into the founder startup bit of it, because that's where there's so much experience also. Now, you spoke about yourself being someone who's more interested in long form, and which is why you didn't really go into news, and the television shows which you were producing were like Foodistan and all that were, I mean, roughly those half an hour slots, right, with ad breaks and all that there. And then the work which was happening on NDTV Food also, especially with columnists like me, Anuti and Vishal and so on, who are writing and were there for a while before, was again more long copy, like 1500 words, 700 words plus sort of thing, versus today we are in the world of 2020 and high pressure reels and, you know, 30 seconds and stuff like that. So are there any sort of rules of storytelling which you see as being constant, even in an environment like this, or is it completely changing?
I think in the food space specifically, you're right. A lot of most things have become shorter and truncated and 2020 as opposed to the test match, right? But I feel in food content especially, some of this cannot be truncated. You know, to put it very simply, if you shave off a few lines from a recipe, your final outcome will be quite, unpalatable. Even in that space, you know, I think it's something that needs more discussion, because the way people are writing now, the way you want to optimize, whether it's making sure that your content is perfect for SEO or SMO, all of this needs long copies. Because the short form is either something which doesn't have a shelf life. So it's a newsy current topic. It'll come and go.
Yeah.
What you're reading about a celebrity today may not be relevant tomorrow. So that warrants, and it's okay to have a shorter copy because, you know, that's all the purpose it serves. But if you're writing a long piece about the best places to have biryani in Hyderabad, or some other such, you need that to have a longer shelf life on the internet while competing with all the other pieces, right? So you need long copies there, at least in food. I can, you know, speak from experience. But a lot of the shorter content is now being taken over by video, which is sort of, you know, so if you want to watch something quickly and you want to know how to cook something quickly, don't read the long article, just quickly watch this 30 seconds. So that balance, I think, is happening.
But even in video, if you see the sort of television content, which I think attracted a lot of us to the space, I mean, the sort of thing which, say, Anthony Bourdain was doing and so on, is there like a market for that now? Because everything seems to be now put it in 30 seconds. Like, I mean, except really the odd show, like maybe Somebody Feed Phil or something like that, you hardly come across any show which is like, you know, long and, you know, built up and whatever. It's like, so sometimes I wonder on which direction things are going, or is it a bit of an upheaval and then it's going to come back?
I think it'll be, I think there's space for both. If you go just by the popularity of Netflix's Chef's Table, it answers a lot of the questions you're raising. It is long form. It's very detailed. It's not necessarily about celebrities as you and I know them. So they come from all over the world, right?
Yeah,
their expertise is their status in that sense, right?
Yes.
So there is place for that. And there is also place for those, you know, the hogging matches. How many burgers can you eat in 30 seconds? I think there is space for both. And there are viewers for both. So I don't think one needs to feel threatened of the other. I think there'll be people who want to consume both. And the value of the consumer who watches the 30-minute video will always be higher, will be at a premium as compared to. So you can do the premium with the volumes and match your scales like that.
You know, I was also smiling as I heard you speak, because while you didn't want to do news, but I think a bit of the newsroom chatter of NDTV is definitely sort of rubbed off on you, because I mean, the way you're sort of analyzing the pros and cons of each aspect seems to be more from the Pranav Roy school, rather than taking one aspect and then, you know, going to town and shouting from the rooftops about it. I once
That's probably also the reviewing.
Yeah, and all the balance.
These parameters. Everything.
We've got one coming up. We've got one coming up together.
Looking forward to that.
Yes. Okay, now, you know, I'm going to come into a startup journey now. And the thing is that you joined NDTV in what was a startup days. In fact, I'd worked in Asian Age in Calcutta just after college for about a month when it was a startup. And of course, now it's shut down. And then later I worked in like proper established corporates and a very different sort of mood and feel. So is there anything from those early days of your career which you feel sort of motivated you or made you think of trying something of your own and something which you picked up from there?
Honestly,
I don't know if you thought of it ever that way.
I didn't. I never thought that I would, I never thought I would go on and do something of my own. Because to be honest, I was very happy with the work that I was doing. And like you said, because I started in the startup days of NDTV, so to speak, you had so much new to do and learn. It never got monotonous. Those 19 years, there was nothing that felt like, oh, I've done this so often now and I'm bored of it. There was always something new to jump to because there was something, a new channel, a new medium was happening. But I think I may have had that streak because I used to keep telling my friends that I'm going to launch my restaurant when I'm 40 for some reason. And I think after having said it a few times, one of my friends, chef friend, turned around and said, "You must be crazy because it's not as easy as you think it is." It's
and do you like to cook?
I like to cook, actually. I like to, I enjoy cooking. But it's not easy and it's difficult and look at the environment and, you know. So I got a little discouraged, maybe. But maybe for the better, because I don't think I would have made a very good restaurant owner. I don't think I could have become a chef ever. There's no, you know, that's not my thing at all. But so that didn't happen. But I do look back and I see that, you know, hindsight is great. You can look back and you have these little signs across spread over maybe 15, 20 years. But then when you put them together, you see a pattern in those signs. Mm. So I have toyed with the idea of having, of helping people buy better in some way or the other. One of my most initial ideas was called Rate My Plate. You know, and it's that I have that one pager still somewhere. And my idea was that if you go to a restaurant, you don't go for everything over there. You go for one thing, right? So what if we could rate that one plate? So if you're going to butter chicken is your thing, then maybe Moti Mahal is where you want to go. If blue cheese naan, and then maybe it's Indian accent. So that one thing that pulls you to a restaurant, then of course, it didn't fly. I think that...
In fact, if I might interject over there for a bit, you know, I sort of feel a connection with that, because whenever I write about restaurants, or even in the past, so a couple of days back, you just happened to walk into a cafe and I wrote about that. You know, when you go in as a regular customer, there are either a few dishes which you know you want to try, or if it's a new place, you try out a few and then you write about those. And that's how a normal experience happens. And I find that a bit different from, you know, what is a hosted review, where someone's invited by the restaurant or hotel or whatever. And then the entire menu card is sort of spread out for them. But that's not how people eat. And it seems a bit unnatural. Okay, talking of food, I'm going to take a little break because Baby Loaf, my elder cat, is here. I don't know if you can see him.
Yes, I can.
But that's the dining room, and his standing there means please feed me. So just give me a second.
Yes.
I'm back after a little kitty break. Baby Loaf, little Nimki, they're all having their little munchies and they're raiding their plates. So Tanu, you're talking about Raid My Plate, which was your idea. Yeah. And you're talking about restaurant reviewing versus real life eating and all that. Okay, so tell me about all the little dots you were connecting.
Yeah, so, you know, that was an idea. Then at some point in NDTV, in fact, while being the editor for that website, I remember thinking there was a report that biryani is the most ordered food in India. Mm. Right?
Yeah,
and that's been so for the last 2-3 years.
And Swiggy or someone.
Swiggy and Zomato, I think, also came out with these reports. And my thought was that obviously there's a demand for this product, which is being catered with, you know, all of these new brands. You open any app that you follow, and there's so many delivery options for biryani. But how does a consumer know which is the better biryani? Because clearly it has nothing to do with marketing budgets, right? It could be still a poorly made biryani, but it's a catch-22. The smaller guys don't have enough money to tom-tom themselves.
Exactly.
And yet you could still end up ordering from an unknown place and have a bad experience. So ultimately the customer has to have either 5 bad experiences to arrive at the best one they want, or be very lucky that you know, get it right in the first shot, and then you stick with that choice. So I think that choice and how to fix that and how to reduce the number of steps that you have to go through is what was in my mind. And that's when I think still with NDTV, we did a huge biryani review. It was over 2 days, Kalyan, and 48 or 49 brands of biryanis were gotten in the Okhla office, and the tasting happened over 2 days. We suddenly were the most sought after team because everyone wanted to taste the biryanis in the office conference room. So, but no, the point was that we could come up with a lot of good options just by tasting simultaneously, you know, there was no blind tasting there, and not a lot of the things that we now do, but just the ability to parallelly compare things and come up with which one is better, that was still there. So by the time the idea of Mishri happened, I wanted to go ahead and do it.
So that's the next chapter. So Mishri, was it like you were planning Mishri and then you moved out of NDTV, or you moved out of NDTV and then you looked at creating this? How was the chronology, so to speak?
So the chronology is...
Chronology, samjhaiye.
So pehle aaya the need to do this, to have a review portal. I didn't spend more than a month or month maybe to do the research that was on it, and I understand that a lot of people like to pursue their own personal venture parallelly for a little while till such time that they think it's viable. I thought I couldn't do that because it was still in the food space, and I didn't feel that it would be right for me to use my position as NDTV editor of food. Also think of a food related subject, even though reviews was not something that NDTV food was doing as its bread and butter, but it just didn't sit right with me. And having been with NDTV for such a long time, I didn't want to create any sort of a bad blood or burn your bridges, or it just didn't sit right with me. So I very quickly, actually, I put in my papers okay. within a couple of months. Once I had put in my papers, then the company was formed. Then I moved really quickly. Then I spoke to people. Obviously, I'd done my own research of whether there is there's a need for this, or will there be traction, whether it's from angels or whether it's from people, and whether within your friends and family. So that research I had done. I wasn't completely foolish about it, but so January I quit, January 2019, I think 2nd January I put in my papers, and 31st January was my last date, and 1st Feb onwards I was sitting in my dining room 9 o'clock every day, working on my idea.
So no break in between.
No, not a single day. I was scared that I would get used to not having a routine. And when you've been in this structured routine thing for such a long time, I thought I'll just get lazy, or I'll get
bored. Tell me about it. Yeah, I can completely relate to that, because being in a structured routine and then not, it takes a while to get used to it. I mean, and then it's really up to one's, I mean, one needn't necessarily get into a replica of an office routine, but eventually one has to find one's way of working. Okay, now I'm going to go straight to this thing which you just said, that is, I was not, you were not that foolish, so to speak, like you said. And, earlier once when we were having a chat, you were speaking about the difference between being driven by passion versus having to run a business. So what is the reality of like a founder's life or a starter's life? I mean, one thing is to be like, say, a freelancer who's following one's passion and trying to sort of implement one's craft, whether a writer, dancer, filmmaker, whatever, versus someone who's trying to run a business where their investments, their salaries to be paid and so on. So how's this life different?
I think that just before you realize what your passion is, you have to assign an intent to it, right? So is the intent of this passion project of mine to build something, or am I doing this just, you know, as my own personal soul satisfying venture, right? And there can be some convergences there, but essentially they need to be treated, in my opinion, slightly differently. And what I was telling you about passion when we were chatting earlier was that, and I read this somewhere, I still can't recall from where, maybe it was a HBR article, but essentially passion is great, but if you keep losing and failing at something again and again and again, that passion will go down, right? Mm. Passion also needs to be fueled by some successes every now and then.
Some glimmer of hope, yeah.
And more importantly, I feel passion is not something that you just stumble upon and everything is perfect. You still need to develop it. You still need to. So my passion may be food per se, but if I don't consciously develop it, whether it is monetizing food or whether it is running content related to food, whichever aspect I may choose to be in, it still needs, it needs thought. It's not, you know, somehow I feel that sometimes we misunderstand passion by just thinking it's all about energy and going ahead and doing and struggling and doesn't matter what the world thinks, I will still do this. You're producing something, you have to make sure there's a market for it.
Yeah.
So to my mind, there has to be a little fine line that you walk there.
Yeah, there's a very interesting chat which I'd had when I was at India Food Network in a panel discussion which I was doing, which was on food reviewing. Hmm. And two of the three panelists over there were Veer Sanghvi and Rahul Akhirkar. Mm-hmm. And first, Rahul Akhirkar came and spoke about like the chef spirit and the creativity and you know, this thing. And then Veer Sanghvi made this point that, you know, it's fine if one looks at oneself as a creative artist, which is creating art for art's sake, you know, like what goes up in a museum or something like that. But if it's something which is created to earn money or earn profit, and I'm paraphrasing them, this is many years back. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there would be feedback to it. There would be a consumer feedback to it. There would be judgments made on it. And I remember you also saying that you need to sort of look at, take feedback seriously, to take a look at the response to different things which you're doing. I'm sure that Mishri has evolved quite a bit in the last 3 years of its existence, right? And in terms of the sort of things which you're doing, sort of media which you've used. Would you like to talk a bit about that and how you've responded to things over time?
Absolutely. So for us also, and I think the word there is you'll keep iterating. Your general yes. idea of what you first came up with will remain the same, I feel, or that's how it's been. I mean, my journey of being an entrepreneur is far shorter, but I speak from whatever experience I have so far. The original idea of Mishri was that, you know, just like you can check a credible editor's review when you're buying a phone or you're buying an auto part or a car or something in the auto industry, why can't you do that in food? Because in food, the only reviews we had were restaurant reviews. And you know this, Kalyan, more than anyone else, that there are very few informed reviewers in that space. And I'm not
informed,
even talking about
and informed and also I would say unbiased, because you know when blogging started at that time, no one knew about bloggers, so people would just go and write about what they would eat. Yes. And then let's see if the informed part was there or not, but at least that was there.
Yeah.
But you know, the more you know, you're hosted, it's organized by someone, the more you know people know you know people. It's a bit difficult to go out and say that, you know, that curry didn't have enough salt, or, you know, that, yes. you know, the dim sum was too thick and stuff like that. So it's The more it gets personal, it gets a bit difficult to do a detached review.
So like you said, there are fewer people who are informed about it and who therefore have the credibility to even say something not so good about the place.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And restaurants will actually value them. There are very few of them in the restaurant review space. So it would largely either be a high praise for a hosted meal or a rant because, I had a terrible experience. There is nothing in between, which is structured, which is done with the intent of actual trying and testing or tasting of that product. And then therefore sharing an honest review based on my experience, on the reviewer's experience. So like one of the things which we do is like akin to a hosted meal is we don't take free samples. We said from the beginning that even if you're reviewing a toaster, a 2000 rupee toaster or a 10 rupee biscuit packet, we will not take free samples. We will buy our own because the moment you buy your own, you have the power and the liberty to speak from your experience. And there is no quid pro quo. And there is nothing that, there is that expectation from you to say something which is not factually correct. From the journey of earlier, we thought that English would be the only site. So we have Mishri.com and we have MishriHindi.in. We thought Hindi would essentially just be a translation site. We learned over the course that actually Hindi grew faster. And the organic growth of Hindi was actually quicker. That the pattern in which the Hindi reader is navigating the site and going is very different. So we changed that. We assumed that the users wouldn't be very interested in telling us what to review. So let's just keep reviewing as per our plan. But then the moment we put that request a review tab, we were surprised that from day one, 2, 8, 10, 20 requests every day to say, okay, can you tell me organic ghee? Some of those we may have already done, but at least, that was a quick way to gauge consumer audience.
In fact, I must say that we need to buy some new karais and all that. And for the first time, we're trying to buy it online. Normally, we'd go to the local market. And as I was going through a page, I saw reviews for anodized pans and stuff like that. We can check those later. And all of this also requires either funding or generation of funds, right? Because eventually, if you're going to do buy products yourself and have a team and all that, then that aspect also needs to be looked at.
Yes. So we were able to raise initial funding through a few angel investors. Veer Sanghvi is one of them. And we have...
So you have a reviewer funding a reviewer. So probably Veer, I don't know whether he's more of a storyteller today because he doesn't really do reviews per se.
He did it once only. But yeah, his choices...
But he's done it all.
Yeah. His discernment when it comes to, being able to tell is just exemplary.
Yes.
So we raised that in the beginning. I think just a month before we went live, to be honest, after I had quit. And I remember I used to spend a lot of time meeting other founders. And one realized that one of the advantages, I think, of going into the entrepreneurial journey a little later is that you have a network. May not be apples to apples network, may not be food to food network, but friends, my husband's friends or colleagues and their cousins or whatever. And you could spot so many founders there and learn from them. And I remember one founder he told me that don't think of monetizing 3 years after you have launched your product. He said, because if you keep trying to polish your product for the, and that's the only thing you do, after 3 years, what if you realize there's no market for it and that you can't monetize it? So don't fall into that thing of, I'll just work on my product and I'll think of paise baad mein dekhenge. He said, don't do that, because it'll have been for nothing, because eventually you do want to, you know, monetize the whole piece.
Yeah.
So I took that advice, and thank God for that. And we started focusing on monetizing very early, which also meant that you were very clear about not spending unnecessarily, right? Mm-hmm. Office is still my garage, 2 rooms in the garage. So we save on all that. We were about to move to an office last year, but then Corona happened, and fortunately we got saved at least in that space. But yeah, that's how it's been. So we've tried new things. We've experimented a lot. We've tried with whether it was Mishri Mums or whether it was Topic stickers. We've tried a lot, dropped the ideas that didn't work.
And some like 20, 21 days, 21 things.
Yes. Tried a lot of different things. But I think the only
your team has also made you do some of the Instagram reel videos, right? One of these.
I'm supposed to do more. Yes. I'm supposed to do more of those.
Yeah.
But eventually, I think, barring the core of the idea that we will do an unbiased review and we will do it at our own cost, that has remained the same, but we've changed, evolved, I would say.
Okay, now let's address the elephant in the room, because the chat is called Foodocracy for Her. And you have a strong point of view on how women founders, entrepreneurs, and all of that are perceived, especially that much more so in the softer areas like food or beauty or so on. So what has your experience been there as someone who's actually coming from a professional context, and you know, at that time maybe your identity would have been NDTV, versus now your identity is that of a woman who's a founder, and that too in food. What are the sort of attitudes you've come across and how have you tackled them?
So fortunately, as much as I'm aware of you know, what you're saying, and one has probably experienced some of that also, I feel that my experience of all of this has been more not in the initial days, but I know, and I you know, the whole perception that if you are if you're in the food space and it's a woman trying to run that, then it must be because she is passionate about cooking, right? Mm. And oh, she loves food. Oh, she must be a good host. So she's trying to make a thing out of it, right?
And something small, thoda sa on the side.
Small, thoda time pass karne ke liye. I mean, some people, when I quit NDTV, some friends and family actually thought that I've retired now and I'm just going to do this for 2 hours a day, you know, thoda sa, just to keep myself busy. And because, hey, if I wasn't retiring, then shouldn't I just pick up another job?
Yes.
What's the need to
do that? That's a conventional thinking, yeah.
Conventional thinking, yeah. But it's a lot of the same kind of stereotyping I would imagine that women in technology get to hear. Because if you're in technology and you're a woman, then that's not a perfect fit. Just like you assume that food and women should be, technology and women shouldn't be. Sure. So, I've heard a lot of founders who are in the technology space experiencing the opposite of it, right? Hmm. I just feel that...
So like a boys club pushing them out.
Yeah, pushing them out, or you can't really be a tech head, right? Because of your gender. So I feel that the good thing is we're at least talking about them, right? There was not even an awareness of these things, say, 5 years back. But I think that it's important that we talk about them and that we find ways to solutionize, you know, at least.
Exactly.
At least
I mean,
move to that. I mean,
yes. So, I mean, what are the sort of misgivings which you want to sort of address? I mean, with regards to women entrepreneurs in general, I mean, even if not from personal experience, yeah. I mean, what are the sort of misconceptions which you would like to address over there?
I think the first one is that it's not as if women entrepreneurs do not think about the P&L. And that they don't think about doubling the revenue or making sure that your efficiencies get higher. It's not like, I mean, that is the primary misconception, which is what leads to the assumption that this may not be such a money-making avenue, right? That's a myth, number one. Number two, the other myth that you have to completely... kill yourself and put yourself in a room away from anything social and anything to do with your family or friends, and that kind of hustle that we sort of glorify sometimes is actually, it shouldn't be, you know. There will be...
And this you're saying is more for women in particular than... any entrepreneur. Like if guys do it, it's sort of
then they're hardworking, seen as okay. They're so committed.
Committed and maybe so broad-minded or so sensitive towards the family, you know.
So when a man entrepreneur or founder will be going through a product launch and does not come home for 3 days, you will say, when he comes back, you will actually say, wow, he's worked so hard. He deserves to sleep now for the next 24 hours, right? when a woman entrepreneur comes back after 3 days of a product launch, chances are she will not get that reception. And when she does that again and again, you know, you will say, her child doesn't miss her? Does her child not miss her? Or how is she managing? The husband is so supportive, you know. How lucky
supportive is the word I was looking for.
How lucky she is to have this person, you know. So, I think talking about money, that's a myth that people think that women entrepreneurs cannot do. We have so many of them in the country now doing fabulously well. Yeah. And we just have to have more of them. We must have more of them. But also, like I was saying, the glorification of a hustle that leaves you mentally exhausted again and again and again shouldn't be done. It's tougher for women because they're trying.
In fact, you've written about that on your Instagram page, the Michi Instagram page. That's how things around anxiety, depression,
shouldn't. We shouldn't glorify it. There's no need to. You need to work hard and you will. If you don't and you're not committed enough, any startup can fail. Most startups fail, then they actually go ahead. But it shouldn't weigh in on you so much that you've completely lost those years of your life and, you know. I think that glorification, I think that balance will become better as more women do this. I think women are just more, wired for a more balance for everything.
I remember once talking to Sheetal Thakkar. So Sheetal is the owner of Som Restaurant, the Gujarati place, and she was one of the first people. She was actually the first person I'd interviewed for Foodocracy for her, and earlier in the Times Kitchen Tales meet. And she said one of the advantages which a woman gets into running a business, I mean, like you said, is wired. So she said about the people sensitivity. She said that, you know, looking at the floor and her employees being a restaurant are like, you know, cooks and, you know, unlettered folks and stuff like that. But she said, I know that, you know, who's going to what, who needs a bit of a push, who needs a bit of a, you know, shoulder or whatever. So that sensitivity wired thing is the same. Okay, now, you've been a founder yourself the last 2 or 3 years. You've interacted with other founders. And in your life before this, you've, been an editor who's interacted with founders, maybe hired them or stuff like that. And so now, if we look at this entire woman founder issue, we've identified that there is a problem in terms of people perhaps not taking them seriously or whatever. And that's like the external environment. So what is your, and this is of course unfortunate, but the thing is that we can wait for the environment to change or do things ourselves. So what is your advice to fellow women entrepreneurs that what can they do to help this perception change, first of all in their own lives and business dealings, and then as a society at large? Any concrete steps which you think helps, like even when you were on the other side and were dealing with women founders or founders in general, like what is it that adds weight to what they have to offer?
I think there are two things. One that I have learned from a lot is that I've learned that most founders, actually, women or not women, are, most of them will be very, very forthcoming with help. And I cannot tell you how privileged I've been to have been able to just get on that one call with someone in those early days when you have so many questions and you don't know too many people who had a similar journey. And so you feel that they can answer your question. So I think the point about just being there for each other, whether you know each other socially or not, anyone who's watching, I can say that if you reach out to any woman founder, chances are they will get back to you. Maybe not immediately, maybe they're having a rush day, maybe not that week, but at some point they will get back to you and they will try their best to hear you, help you, be a sounding board for those initial few days. I don't mean that in an investing.
Ask for help.
Ask for help. Yeah. Ask for help and
help as an advice or whatever.
Advice. Yeah. Not from an investing purpose. I mean, those are different. The second is, I feel that a lot of the general issues that we find around us and that we, like I said, fortunately at least talk about now, is because there just aren't enough women working in the whether it's leadership roles or otherwise. Just more women, like Sheetal Kakkar said, not just being in the leadership place, but also more managers who are women. They will also know, right? I think we need to do. We need to have more women back, especially the ones that stop working when they have babies, and that's a very small thing that we did at Mishri. In fact, Mishri Mums, which is our community of mothers now, originally it was supposed to be, it was an in-house thing. We used to call it Mishri Mums, and we used to say that. I mean, I have a lot of friends who stopped working when they had kids, and they were regular, office-going women, didn't have so much child support or chose to be at home. But now that the kids are older, they want to get back. But there are very few avenues which sort of justify the pay they will take home vis-a-vis the hours they will put in, And I used to hear them all say so often that we're going to go back to our salaries, which is 10 years back. 10-year back old salary, but for a full day at work. So is it worth it? Wouldn't I much rather, can I get something which is for 4 hours, 5 hours? And so for us, Mishri Mums was a way to get these women back into the workforce for a short period. So they would work, when the kids were at school and make sure that they're back before the school.
So how is Mishri Mums different from Mishri Reviews? What did you do in Mishri Reviews?
So Mishri Mums is the community of Mishri Reviews. Okay. It's a community of mothers, because like you were asking me earlier how things evolved. So Mishri Mums, from just being an opportunity that we felt we could offer in certain positions in the team to these mothers who would come in for the number of hours that they were available for. In fact, one of our reviewers still happens to be someone who started like that for us. and head back and go back. And I felt that it also made a lot of business sense because they were coming with a lot of experience. And frankly, I couldn't pay them for an 8-hour day, 5 days
a week. Full commitment, yes.
Because I couldn't afford them as a as an early startup. So it
and maybe you didn't need that also.
Maybe you didn't need that. Yeah, that's true. That happened with someone we had started off with.
Yeah.
So, you know, roles evolve and then their commitment, they come with a lot of expertise and experience and they still work the hours that work for them. They still go back with a sense of satisfaction of doing something and they make industry standard money for it, right? They're not made to feel you're leaving early for home or, you know, some, you know, none of those. That is not there. So all in all, it worked out well. And then of course, as we evolved, Mishri Moms became a community of mothers who review for us. Because we felt that we had, while we
so,
were
working, So they get compensated for that?
No. We buy the product and we give them the product. Okay. So it's not a free, I mean, for them, it's a product they don't have to pay for, but there we don't pay them for the review. At all. This is a small group right now on Facebook, just about 1,000 mothers on it. But the idea was that while we are bolstering our editorial reviews, let's also add a user angle to it. Yeah. But let that be from moms. Let that be from mothers. Because when I know that another mother is asking me for an opinion on, you know, what food to give or what to buy for the kitchen, I will give my genuine opinion. You know, it's not like one of those influencer kind of, a model where a free sample is what gets you a good review.
Yeah.
Even for these, we buy them and we give them the product.
And it also is giving them a sense of self-worth. In a sense, with what they're doing.
Yeah. Actually, most of them do it just for a voice. They want people to know that this is what they feel and they feel that this particular variant of noodles was not tasty enough. Just for that, you know.
In fact, even when we used to do focus groups and the respondents would come in the market research days, I mean, they would love to give their opinion and that's one of the biggest things which would drive them. So I think it was a fascinating chat and a fascinating journey from editorial to, from TV to print, and then entrepreneurship and reviewing, and then this entire issue of women entrepreneurs, like you said. And I think that, right now it's a bit of a pioneering generation, people like you and so many other people who are doing work. And I think that is what's going to bring in the change. I mean, we can just sit and, sort of complain about how things are, but I think that's going to do. And in fact, when I started Foodocracy for Her, the series more than a year back, at that time, sometimes I was wondering, because you know how it is that sometimes if you do, a woman-focused thing, people might say that, is that being too patronizing or how would a guy know about women's issue and all that. But it was just an endeavor to sort of bring out all the fascinating work which is happening over there, because there is a lot of work happening there, which is driven by women, and work which is fabulous by itself. I mean, not that it's fabulous because it's being done by a woman. I mean, your journey could have been that of a entrepreneur. Gender neutral. It's not really. Thanks, but thanks so much for chatting, spending so much time, and sharing from all your experiences. I'm sure it's going to give a lot of ideas and insights, and maybe even hope to people. And you never know, this chat might be the spark which starts off some chat which I'll have with someone else in the future, and maybe she might start off her own thing after hearing you. And then maybe you can review whatever she does. So it's going to be like a full cycle.
We've just launched. Sorry, I'm just going to take the last 30 seconds.
No, please say that.
We launched something called Curated by Mishri. So Curated by Mishri is exactly for smaller brands, probably available just in a Delhi or a Bangalore or Mumbai. And so if there's anyone with a newer brand and you think that you want us to check out your product, we will buy our own samples, so you don't have to send us anything. But if you want us to just take a look and review your product, just, you know, you can tell Kalyan to connect and we'll get in touch.
And otherwise, how do they DM you, or do they DM you on the Instagram page? Or
yeah, they can go to Mishri on Instagram, Mishri Reviews on Instagram, and just DM us
or
there.
Facebook.
Yes, or Facebook. It's Mishri Reviews everywhere, Instagram and Facebook. But lovely. Thank you so much, Kalyan, for doing
this. Wait, I forgot to ask the most important question. Why Mishri? Is it that sugar Mishri thing?
It is the sugar Mishri thing.
But not sugar-coated.
Not sugar-coated. The thing was that how Mishri completes your meal and make sure that it all sort of rounds off nicely at the end. The idea was that if you buy something after reading our review, it'll be all smooth and well. And it helped that it was a short name and my son picked it. So, yeah.
in fact, at least in Bengal, I remember it was given to kids because my Mishri. Younger brother would be given Mishri, especially when they're teething and stuff like that. Okay, so thank you. Pleasure talking to you, Tanu, and all the best for Mishri Reviews. And all the folks who've got new brands, you can get in touch with them if you want them to check out, buy your product and curate it. And people looking for suggestions on what to buy, look up their pages. There are many, many categories covered.
Thank you so much, Kalyan. Always such a pleasure talking to you about food and, you know, everything we love. So thank you. Yes.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.